First, I'm very pleased to welcome to start with Malcolm Reeve. Malcolm is the head of the New Model Special School in Essex. Essex is a local authority which is in Wave 4 of the Building Schools for the Future programme, and which has a number of its special schools in the first phase of the Building Schools for the Future programme, and is unusual in that respect. And so a lot of thought has gone on as part of the process in Essex, and Malcolm has been instrumental in this, in thinking about how we can construct an output specification for ICT and Building Schools for the Future, which actually meets the needs of children with complex and profound learning difficulties. Malcolm's expertise in this area and in the area of special needs is recognised internationally, and he's shortly off to China to advise the Chinese government on provision for educating children with complex and profound special educational needs. We're very fortunate to have him with us this morning. And for the next half hour, Malcolm, over to you.
Thank you. Well, that's a rather grandiose introduction, but basically what I'd like to say to you is I'm a head teacher who cares passionately about children with severe and complex needs. And I work in two schools called Chelmsford New Model Special School, where we have 240 students of that type. As Steve said, we're part of the BSF Wave 4 project in Essex. We are, as part of that, developing an output specification for ICT, as well as designing our new buildings and making them fit for purpose for our types of learners. What I want to tell you about this morning is a little bit about the children that I work with, or I should say children and young people that I work with, and then show you how we've got, if you like, a vision or some ideas about what we aspire to for in the way that we can use technology to support those young people. And I don't know how many people in the audience are particularly interested in the area of disability. My view would be the principles that I'll talk about this morning apply to all children. They're aspirational, and they are about people's rights, people's entitlement, people's right to have the equipment that suits them. I've called it empowering social inclusion because actually that's the purpose of my organisation. The purpose of my organisation is not to give children a really good education in school for a few years and then send them out and think, right, okay guys, off you go. You've been a really great student, you've been brilliant at this school, we've really loved having you here, now go and face the big wide world. We would like to judge our success by the extent to which our disabled young people are included in society when they leave. And probably my greatest fear is that a young person with disabilities gets a very strong education and then at 21 they're at home watching daytime TV without the ability or the facility to be included. And if that happens, then I would regard my school as having failed, whatever Ofsted might say or anybody might say by coming and look around at the standards in the school. So let's go with it. This is a little bit about the school. So it's called Chelmsford New Model Special School. This is one of the campuses, Haywood Campus. That's the range of students in the school. You know there are three categories of learning difficulty for students in our country: moderate, severe, and profound and multiple. We've got the full age range, have a nursery, and we have students 19, and we're quite excited about the possibility of developing a provision post-19 up to 25. 240 students makes us one of the largest special schools around. Largest isn't necessarily best, as we all know, but it does give us some ability to be very aspirational in our goals. Two campuses, as I've already said. We promote key skills, which is about the development of the whole person rather than the statutory curricula. If I had to say what the purpose of the school is, I've already said, it's social inclusion. And we are part of the BSF project, which is how we became involved with Partnership for Schools. And we've got new buildings, a new college, a complete new college, co-located on the side of a secondary school, and a refurbishment and redevelopment of our school campus just across the road. And it's a very exciting time for us. These are our pupils.
combination of words I could put on the back of a postcard. No song that I could sing, but I could try for your heart. Our dreams, and they are made out of real things, like a shoebox of photographs and sepia tone loving. Love is the answer, at least for most of the questions in my heart. Why are we here and where do we go? Knock on us so hard. It's not always easy, and sometimes life can be deceiving. I'll tell you one thing, it's always better when we're together. It's always better when we're together. Yeah, we'll look at them stars when we're together. Well, it's always better when we're together. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. I find the way to my dreams tonight, but I know that they'll be gone when the morning light sings or brings new things. For tomorrow now you see that they'll be gone too, too many things I have to do. But if all of these dreams might find their way into my day-to-day scene, I'd be under the impression I was somewhere in between, with only two, just me and you. Not so many things we got to do, places we got to be. We're sitting beneath the mango tree now. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. We're somewhere in between together. Well, it's always better when we're together. Yeah, it's always better when we're together.
I think you saw the full range of students there, from those with what we would call moderate learning difficulties to those with severe and profound. And the challenge for us is to think, how can ICT open doors to them and assist them in their learning, and directly, how can it assist in their social inclusion? We, as part of the BSF process, had to construct a vision for ICT. And I'm not an expert on ICT, and I'm not, if I can say this, I'm not into the kit, as it were. I'm not into what the computers are, what the handheld devices are. It doesn't worry me in this context. What concerns me is, what's the vision? What do I want them to be able to do? So our vision is based around what we want our children to be able to do. And we've got seven elements to the vision. And you can see them all there, empowering social inclusion being the third one. Let me tell you a little bit about each of them, and then I'll show you a project we've done with some handheld devices in the school. So personalised learning, we want our children to have personalised devices, which means obviously it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all. We won't be a school that says we want, a load of these devices, and they're going to be the devices that children use in our school. They've got to be tailor-made, they've got to be specific to the children. We want to use technology to allow, as you can see here, the student and the people around them. So in our context, that means the therapists and the parents. Our children don't go home at night and say to mum and dad, oh, this is what I did in school today. There needs to be technology which is enabling those students to share what's gone on in school, enabling parents to see what's happened in school. And so that we can share news, successes, and our concerns about the child as well. We want to use devices, and here's a young lady using, it's called a Samsung Q1, that device. This is what we trialled in school. I don't have, by the way, any interest in Samsung or Q1s particularly, but what we did do was trial these Q1s in school. And they work very successfully with our children. I'll tell you a bit more about it at the moment. But we want the communication devices to be available anytime, anywhere. Learning's taking place where the learner is. Learning doesn't just take place in school, does it? Wherever that learner is, learning is going to take place. And they need their communication, their handheld device, with them wherever they happen to be. So they're not owned by the school, they're owned by the person. They're tailor-made to the young person that has it, and they take them, and they keep them, and they keep them at home. And when they leave school, they take them with them. We'd like to create some virtual learning environments, and for us, I know that many of you will have a view about what that is, but let me take you somewhere different. This is a young lady on an independent skills program, trying to learn how to catch a train and find the information. What we imagine is a room. We've got these rooms called sensory rooms in school. You've seen some photos. A room where we can rehearse a child catching a train. So we can set up a massive great wall of screens with a train coming into the station, with the noise of a train coming into the station, with the announcement coming over the the speaker, with the rumble of the train as it approaches, so that a young person with disabilities is getting used to that. They're rehearsing the real-life situations which they'll be exposed to in a virtual learning environment. And we would love to be able to develop that. We haven't got it, but we'd love to be able to develop it. And here we see a young lady, Sarah, with profound and multiple learning difficulties, enjoying using, in this case, an interactive whiteboard and making patterns with her hands. And she is unable to speak. She's unable to walk, as you can perhaps see. She is able to have some movement over her hands, and she enjoys getting up close to the screen and using it. And that's helping her and motivating her. She's not just sitting in her wheelchair passively. She's actively engaged in ICT there, isn't she? We want a learning portal. There's nothing particularly new here, that helps us with online induction training and coaching, both for students and for ourselves. We'd like to use portable devices like this, so that the girl that you saw in the previous screen, Sarah, who has to be moved in a particular way, lifted in a particular way, changed when she needs changing, fed in a particular way, we'd like a communication device that can show that to anybody that's with Sarah. Well, she's not going to tell you herself, actually, when you lift me like that, it really hurts me. We want her to have that on there so that any change of carer, any new staff coming in can see, this is Sarah, this is what I like, this is what I dislike, this is how you can change me in the toilet, and this is how it will make me feel more comfortable. And we see a power in technology being able to do that. And we would like young people like Jahan here to have choice and control over their environment. You and I are able to dim the lights or alter the temperature, and why shouldn't a young person with disabilities be able to do that? So we aspire to young people with disabilities having more choice and control over their lives, and we believe technology can help them do that. And here's Jahan with a switch device, which is enabling her to control a piece of electrical equipment. And why shouldn't children be able to do that? And why shouldn't children with disabilities be able to do that? And why should, just because they're in a wheelchair, they not have the opportunity to control the environment that they're in? Specifically for this, handheld devices. Some of the things we think that handheld devices can help with our population. They can promote independence, because most of all, we're trying to foster social inclusion. We want the young person to be as independent as they possibly can be. And the information that's contained on there personal device helps them, whether it be a communicator, whether it be a bit of video that they can show somebody, it helps them to be independent. And it encourages collaborative learning. There's something quite funky anyway about having your own personal device, isn't there? Because I quite like to show people mine and this is what it does and all the rest of it. And for our kids, they're no different. They want to share it and they want to show people their new piece of kit, what it does, and share their stories. And so it promotes collaboration. It's a device around which discussion takes place and sharing takes place. It certainly engages them. You saw Sarah in the picture engaged with using the screen at school, but in a minute you'll see Sarah engaged with using a portable device. So that's a girl who has very little control over her body using a portable device, engaged in learning. We think they'll foster social inclusion. It can foster it in the passive way I just mentioned, in the sense that the young person is able to have with them a communication device, which will tell other people about them, because they're unable to speak themselves, some of them. So it fosters that. It fosters social inclusion. If the people that you're with, the adults you're with, understand you, and the other children that you're with can understand you, so it can foster in that passive way. But it fosters social inclusion in that you'll see young people in a minute using their handheld devices with prompts on there, which is helping them to be in the real world. So, for instance, little cues, little tips, a little bit of video they can watch, a little bit of sound they can hear when they're out in the community helps them to feel confident about what they're doing. Remember, when you walk into the shop, you need to do this. It can come up on their screen or on their earpiece. Tailored to the individual. So a handheld device can be tailored to the needs of the individual. We all make that choice, don't we, about whatever it is that we want to use. And it's based on colour. It's based on the shape of it, it's based on the features that it's got. For a person with disabilities, it's based on a few more things than that. But why shouldn't they have personalised devices tailored to their needs? And I've already mentioned the amount of access we'd like them to have. It's not just in school. We won't be having banks of handheld devices that when they come in the morning, oh, we'll hand you over your handheld device now, you can keep it for the day. By the way, hand it back before you go, we've got a charger. It's your device. Take responsibility for it, look after it, use it. So we trialled these. This is Essex County Council, who we're part of, enabled us to have a pilot of this particular handheld device. I had some quite good features which suited us. It's handheld, it's portable. It's got a touch screen. It's got a keyboard. You'll see in a minute, you'll see children using this device in different ways, depending on whether they're able to use the keyboard or the touch screen. It's got a stylus. So three different ways in which a young person with disabilities can engage with it. And you'll see all the examples of that in a moment. It's got a camera for recording. It's got a voice recorder. Runs on Windows XP. Now, I've got no argument about the use of Q1. You know, I'm not selling Q1s in the slightest. I'm sharing with you it's a portable device that we used, and it served a good purpose in our school. I thought there were some great examples there of all types of students using handheld technology in different ways, from using the stylus, from using the touchscreen, from using the keyboard, and the flexibility of that and the enjoyment they got from that, I think, shows in the pictures. What we aspire to in the school is every young person with a disability, if it's relevant, if it's appropriate, to have a handheld device which will help foster their social inclusion and which they can take anywhere with them. And I don't know where all you guys come from, but if there's anybody out there in the audience who has the knowledge and the ability to develop handheld devices for people with disabilities like this, we'd be interested in talking to you and hearing your ideas. That's just one example. I think I'll stop now and say thank you and invite you to ask any questions that you'd like to ask.
Thank you very much, Malcolm. I think that's terribly impressive, not only in terms of the use of the trialling of the devices with young people at the moment, but also the thought that's gone into the rationale for the future use of those devices in as part of the BSF programme. The most compelling presentation I've seen in terms of an argument for not technology for its own sake, no, but for technology as a means of enhancing social inclusion. So thank you very much for that, Malcolm. Any questions or points that you would like to put to Malcolm?
It's a comment, really, Malcolm, because I've been fortunate enough to work with Essex on their BSF journey, and I know from that experience that the knowledge and sharing from the special schools to the mainstream schools has made their particular ICT output spec quite different. Malcolm, could you expand on a little bit of some of the challenges that you fed into the system and how the programme benefited from those?
Well, I think one of the things that the special school, I hope you get a bit of a feel from it this morning, one of the things that the special school colleagues come from is, if you like, a principled vision about what they want for young people with disabilities. It's a values-led input into the programme. And so we're focused on the outcomes for our young people rather than just on, as we've already said, kit, as it were. I don't know what the right word is, but let's call it kit. And what we're particularly interested in is making sure that every young person, whatever their level of disability, has a virtual learning platform that they will be able to engage in and that will be meaningful and relevant for them. And what we've been trying to avoid is being, what shall we say, railroaded or driven by the secondary schools and what they want for their students. We feel what they want for their students is everything that we want for our students, plus accessibility, please, plus personalisation, please, plus tailor-made devices, please. And we feel that the benefit of that is that we're looking at an output specification for ICT, which is incredibly challenging, but which will also enhance what's going on in the secondary schools as well. But it's basically that additional tailor-making, personalisation, and relevance for young people.
Thank you. Can I just ask, were there any issues around funding for special schools' ICT requirements? Because I have some heads that are rather concerned about the funding formula PFS. Could you talk to us about that?
Well, I think the trouble is what I'm talking about costs, doesn't it? In this sense, Essex has just completed its output specification, it's quite, you know, it's challenging and it's far-reaching. I don't know, to be honest with you, how it's going to be funded. What I do know is that that's what we want, and I'm told that the BSF process is about educators like me that aren't technically minded guys. Having a vision about what they want for their learners, because that's how we'll bring about transformation. And if we don't set the bar high, then we won't achieve it. If we settle for second best, so we're not settling for second best, so I don't know how it's going to be funded. I don't know what the response of the IT companies will be to our output specification, but I'm not lowering my sights because I'm worried about costs at this stage.
OK,
Can I just pick that up for a minute, Malcolm? I think one of the key things for those of you who are going to be coming into BSF is that the funding formula is not on a per school basis, it's on a per pupil formula for the whole local authority, which is £1,450 per pupil place. And that's not an allocation for a school. So a school with 1,000 pupils doesn't get £1.4 million in that funding. That funding formula is meant to be recognised in such a way that if students with special educational needs, there may only be two or three students in a particular authority who need a device. You talked about individual devices, who need a particular device, and they are expensive. That can be met within that formula with minimal impact on the remaining funding for students who are in mainstream schools, simply because the number of pupils for whom you're providing those devices is relatively small. And being able to spend £4,000 or £5,000 per pupil on learners with profound and multiple learning difficulties across a local authority might only take £5 off the amount per student for all those students in the remaining schools. And it's about heads getting together early enough and making sure that the funding is spent not equally but equitably to meet the needs of all those students, which is really important. Mm. Can I thank you once again, Malcolm, for a really good presentation.
Okay,
thank you very much indeed.
Thanks.